Anyway, let's get back to the parable of the return journey. The son, in this parable, roams about seeking livelihood for the sake of food and clothing. The son, we know, represents the lower self, the alienated self. So he's roaming around, wandering from place to place, and he's looking, he's in search of the necessities of life. Now let's translate this into modern terms. All he wants is food and clothing. He's got no higher ideal than that. Doesn't think about wealth or riches or trade or business or commerce like his good father. All he wants is food and clothing. So we may borrow terms from Abraham Maslow, from his book, The Psychology of, Towards the Psychology of Being, and we can say that the lower self is need motivated. He's not growth motivated. If you want to know in greater detail what this means, I suggest you turn to this book, Towards the Psychology of Being by Abraham Maslow. It's a very interesting and well-written book indeed. But the father is different. Whereas the son, the alienated self, is need motivated. He does everything out of a need, a subjective need, a craving. The father is, as it were, growth motivated. He's growing all the time, developing all the time. The parable expresses all this in terms of riches, but you're not to think that the parable is talking about money grabbing, or that it's glorifying capitalism or anything like that. It's a parable. It has a meaning. It's symbolical, if you like. So the father is growing. He's the higher self. And he's accumulating, as it were. He's possessed of all possible, all conceivable spiritual riches and spiritual qualities. He isn't indigent, spiritually. He's rich. He's well endowed. We'll go into all this a little bit later on. And all the time, the text says, he's thinking of the son. This has a meaning. There are two selves, the higher self and the lower self. The higher self never loses its awareness. It's conscious, it's aware, all the time. We may forget it. We may become oblivious to it. We may forget it. But it never forgets us. But at the same time, and this is the mystery, we are it. It's as though there are two chambers. I've used this analogy before. It's as though there are two chambers. It's as though underground there's an enormous subterranean chamber which is all lit up from within. But there are no windows from the outside in. So you can't see that subterranean chamber. You can't see that light inside. And you are, as it were, living in a little tiny chamber next to that big one. And you're living inside that. This, of course, is the lower self. And you're not aware of that other, much larger chamber, of which this little chamber is really a part. There's a sort of wall, a partition between the two. But it's as though there's a pane in between of glass, which is transparent from one side, but not transparent from the other. It's as though one can look from that larger illuminated chamber through that panel, through that window, into this little chamber, but you cannot look from the little chamber into the big chamber. So it's as though the big chamber knows what is going on in the little chamber, but the little chamber doesn't know what is going on in the big chamber. Or in other words, as I've said, the higher self doesn't forget the lower self, even though the lower self forgets the higher self. But even though the lower self forgets the higher self is all the time the higher self of the lower self.